Hello and welcome to the Substance of Life podcast radio show. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Angela, and this is the Substance of Life. Today we are very fortunate to have Miss Miriam Raley back again today. And today's topic that we're going to discuss fits into the category of fit for you. And fit for you takes on the connotation that you should be in the very best health physically and mentally. So fit for you means whatever it takes for you to get to where you need to be in a positive state mentally and physically, you should be there. So today's topic we are going to talk about is Black women in depression. And we are emphasizing that particular topic today because we want to inspire, educate you on that particular topic. We don't want to bore you with statistics, but we do want to kind of give you a different perspective and probably leave you with some antidotes that might be able to help. As always, if you feel that you need mental health assistance, there is a public health counselor in your area that you can contact, as well as going to your medical professional. So, with that, Miriam, welcome. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Angela.
Listen, growing up, there were certain topics that one did not talk about in one's household. And depression in the African-American community, especially in the church area, was one of those topics. And today you and I are sitting here having a conversation centered around Black women and depression. Can you explain to my audience some of the symptoms of an individual who is still functioning, doing all that one is supposed to do, but suffers from depression?
Of course. You bring up a very valid point about not being able to have a discussion about depression. That is still common in society, especially in the Black community. Anything regarding mental health has such a negative stigma. It has been that way for so many years, much longer than my lifetime. And it is getting better, but it's not where it needs to be. But because of talk shows like this, having open dialogue, it will help us shed a new light on depression in hopes that it will enlighten us to get the help that we much need. And it is my personal opinion that so many of us, we may be experiencing these symptoms. We just may not have a medical diagnosis, but it doesn't mean they do not exist in our life.
So what are some of the symptoms that one might encounter?
Well, according to a doctor's diagnosis of depression, one may experience sadness, grief, loss of loved one, loss of job, could be very tired for no reason, lots of fatigue, a desire to be shut off from other people, not wanting to communicate. Could be a loss of appetite, unexplained weight gain or unexplained weight loss. Also, could be anger, frustration, and the symptoms must persist over a 14-day period, over a two-week period, and accompanying 7 of 10 symptoms, I don't know if I named all 10, one of them must be thoughts of death or suicide, and also the desire to just shut off from the world.
So, you know, usually when I speak in my sister circles and I talk to girlfriends, they have coined that as being in a funk, but it's not really being in a funk. It's from what you've just shared. It's a form of depression. You're not just in a funk.
I use that term too, being in a funk. And the way I would distinguish between the two is the length of time that lasts. It is common. I mean, everyone has sad days or bad days that you can be in a funk. But when that problem persists, and those behaviors persist over a two-week period, it would be considered a form of depression. Now, before 2013, grief, like from a loss of a loved one, was not considered a depression because everyone's expected to feel sad when someone passes away. But when it is prolonged, some people grieve for years, and now it is being classified as a form of depression.
I see. So is that like natural? Is that a natural form? I know that, and I'll take myself, for example, when my mother died, I did not have time to grieve because I was the individual who took care of all of the services that were required for burying her. And so within the time period of her dying and, you know, having her homegoing services, which she had two because she had specific requirements, one in New York and then she wanted to be flown to Georgia and then have services there. That was a two-week period in my life where I was constantly going and going and going and going and trying to prepare for everything that I needed to prepare for. I did not get an opportunity to grieve at all for her. It was just like, okay, it's something else you have to do, so get it done. I remember after all was said and done, I started feeling physical pain. And I had to go to the hospital because I thought I was having a heart attack. And I didn't know if that was a form of depression or my body just saying, hey, you've abused us enough. It's time to just stop, grieve, and move forward.
Well, it could be a combination of things, Angela. First and foremost, grief for the loss of a loved one does not have to come immediately after that loss. It may not manifest for years, or it could manifest with the trigger of certain memories and things like that. It doesn't mean that you're not sad, or I know you were in get it done mode, and that was probably your way of deflecting your feelings because you had to get these things done. You weren't in a position to experience your grief as you might have thought grief looks like to you. That's perfectly okay, and I do think that is normal. It happens a lot. But one thing about depression in Black women, it manifests differently in us. It doesn't always look the same. That's oftentimes why we get coined the phrase angry Black women, because, you know, we're not angry, we're depressed. We're not mad.
What does depressed look like that's different in us than it would be in our counterparts? How is it different?
Depression shows up in Black women as comorbidities, diabetes, high blood pressure, physical chronic pain, back pain, migraines.
So I might have been depressed, really, and
very
didn't even recognize it.
Very much so. It shows up in comorbidities, and that's some of the mask of depression. It gets hidden behind these diseases that are killing us. But the depression keeps us from being able to be treated, or keeps us from having the desire to be treated or even acknowledge that things are wrong. We're not taking the best care of ourselves. That's all part of the depression. And it just shows up differently in Black women.
But, you know, it's interesting in that, and I say this all the time, I don't have time to be depressed. I don't have time to be sick, because if I go down, so does the ship.
Indeed.
And I mean, that's like a banner you carry with you from childhood forward when you're a Black woman. I don't have time to go through this because if I go down, so does the ship. How does one recognize and deal with that so that you don't go down, but you nurture yourself to make yourself more healthy in the mental health realm?
That is becoming more topical now. You hear a lot of talk about self-care. That's part of the preventative strategy for depression. We do need to take care of ourselves. And as Black women, we are programmed from a very young age to serve in all these roles, to be the mother, the father, the caregiver for parents and children and grandchildren, the financier for the whole family, the primary breadwinner. We have so many roles, and we put everyone else's needs before our own. We do not tend to ourselves. So now the focus is on self-care, where we are trying to educate ourselves or trying to, I'm going to say, spoil ourselves, even though I'll get into that in just a little bit, spoil ourselves with things that make us happy or that bring us relaxation or a small bit of joy. We have to be very intentional on doing these things. And some people do consider that as spoiling or luxuries, when in my opinion, they are, you know, they're necessities of life.
You're right, because, you know, once upon a time when the children were in the home and, you know, they're adults now, and I had to do everything or take one here or do this or do that, you know, going to the hairstylist to get my hair done was, you know, maybe a once a month kind of thing. Getting my nails done or getting a pedicure, I didn't do as often, because in the midst of the raising in the home and the different hats that one wears, I did not have the time, or at least I thought I did not have the time, to carve out that time for me. So now, when I say, hey, I'm going to go to the stylist, and it's an every week thing, it's like, oh, God, she's spoiling herself. Why is she doing that? Or I get my nails done or a pedicure done, you know, every week or every other week. It's spoiling. But in fact, what I'm doing is I'm doing what I should have been doing all along.
Absolutely. And it's because you deserve it. We deserve it. We deserve to treat ourselves. Again, so many times we put ourselves on the back burner. We forego our educational and career goals to allow other people to meet their goals or to pursue their own dreams. We let ours fall to the wayside. All the while, we're still doing all the things that we have to do to make sure everything is okay. That responsibility falls on us. And though that responsibility may fall, we don't have to fall with it. We can carry the weight, we can carry the load, but we do have to learn to take care of ourselves in the realms of health and wellness and self-care. And all self-care does not come with a dollar price tag on it. You know, it could be a bubble bath, it could be time away, it could be some meditation time. All these things add value, and they do add up, and they are priceless, in my opinion.
So where does one start? Say, you know that you need to start administering some self-care. You mentioned meditation. You mentioned maybe even taking a bubble bath. Where does one start when one recognizes, hey, I'm in this funk? And yes, I'm using the word funk, and I'm not using the word depression, because, you know, as I grew up, that was just a word you didn't use. And I got to tell you, when I joined the military, that was a word you definitely never used. You never, ever said the word depression, because it was something that a good airman never experiences. Or a good soldier, or, you know, if you were in any of the services, you just didn't discuss it. It just didn't happen. Okay. Mental health was taboo. So now that we're in the 21st century and everybody's recognizing, hey, we might have had it wrong back then, you need to engage in those types of conversations. Where do you start?
The conversations are tough. The conversations are tough. A lot of times we don't want to admit to ourselves that, okay, this is us. Depression seems like a bad word, when in fact it's not. You know, someone can have a depression diagnosis. They could have depression. Depression does not have to have them. It does not have to rule your life. It is a very manageable condition if one seeks the proper help, if one pursues the self-care. Again, it comes in many forms. And if you are trying to administer some self-care and things aren't working, try something else. But I think you have to be very intentional, carving out time in your week. I won't even say your day. You could start out 10 minutes of prayer, or 10 minutes of meditation, 10 minutes of time to yourself.
So to me, what you're saying is you really need to get in tune with who you are. And a lot of times we may hold up that mirror but the reflection is not us. It's what we want it to be, but it's not the real us. And the first step might be, hey, you need to hold up the mirror to see who you really are. And then work from there.
And again, it's hard to look at yourself and to see what you really are because we've suppressed it so much. We've been programmed to suppress our feelings, to suppress our thoughts, and in some cases, even suppress our dreams. Like, for example, I'll use my mom, who was the mother of 12 children.
Oh, my.
And as she, in her last quarter of her life, I learned that she always wanted to go to the Air Force. She wanted to be a nurse, things I never knew about her. She set her dreams to the side because that's what she was expected to do as a wife and as a mother. And I think it took a toll on her as the years went on. But I also think it put her in a position to inspire and encourage us to pursue our dreams and our goals, no matter how big or small. She was my biggest fan and my biggest cheerleader and supporter. And I always felt that I was trying to live my best life for her.
So do you think she was depressed in that she could not achieve some of those goals? Because it's funny, you're mentioning this, and now I'm reflecting back on my mother-in-law and some of the things that I saw where she put some things on hold. Because she was a full-time housewife, and she didn't go into the workplace until later in life. And I remember she had a job at Time Magazine, which she was so proud of, because when we first met one another, she talked about her job constantly. And then often she would say, I wish that I had started this earlier, or I wish that I had waited for relationships with Daddy, who was my father-in-law, and moved into another realm of career. And I honestly believe that she, to a certain extent, became depressed a bit by not having fulfilled her dreams.
I think that's very depressing, and I do think my mom was depressed. I think just in nature, most all Black women are depressed, and I know I'll get a lot of flack for saying
yes,
that.
Yes, you will.
Yes.
As long as you know that.
Yes, and I understand that, and I'll take responsibility for that, but let me explain to you why I say that. Just our society is very hard on Black people as a whole. But again, women, we have to suffer. It compounds for us three ways. We have to face, of course, the racial discrimination. We have to face the discretion of or the discrimination just from being a woman. So that's compounded twice. And then when we take on all the burdens of maintaining a household or just maintaining in society, we have to contend with racism. We have to contend with the sexism. We have to contend with physical and mental abuse that is injected on us. We deal with it from each other, you know, that social abuse, I'll call it, just among our, not our friends, but our peers. You know, it's women to woman is, you know, it's very tough. It's a very tough dynamic.
And I want to stop right there because you know, whenever we meet, you always trigger something. You do. So I want our audience to know that at the Substance of Life podcast, this being the month of March and every March for every year, we have deemed it Be Kind to a Sister Month or Uplift a Sister Month. And we are asking our audience listeners to say something encouraging and say something positive to another woman. Because you're right. And I don't know what the trigger in society is, but you do see that more and more. That peer-to-peer negativity that creeps up. And it can be depressing because here it is, someone of my same gender. I've got to contend with stuff outside, but you being of my same gender or you being a sister to me, because by sheer fact that you are a woman and you are a woman of color, I shouldn't have to deal with this. You should be uplifting me.
It's absolutely right. And I will tell you, being a very fair-skinned black woman, I've had to contend with a lot of racism and discrimination in my life, but I will share that the most hurtful and heartfelt discrimination has been against or with other black women. And I'll tell you why that hurts so much. And if you have children, you could probably relate to what I'm about to say, but I feel like you expect more of your own than you do of someone else's. For example, you expect your child to be more well-mannered or more disciplined because you've raised them that way, as opposed to, you know, the little boy next door. Well, you know, you don't know how he was raised, so you hold him to a different standard. As far as black women, I feel like you are my own, but black women have hurt me so much that it has caused a lot of depression, and a lot of it has to do with the skin tone, that Willie Lynch mentality, you know, the darker the skin.
So I was going to say, for our audience, because we may have some younger listeners who may not even know that name, explain to us that Willie Lynch experience.
That experience is based on, William Lynch is a real, I'm going to call him a character just for lack of better words or other words, but he was a slave owner, and back in slave time, he thought that it would make sense for us to basically be our own demise, and he thought it was wise to set us apart based on color and to bid us against each other based on color, or based on the texture of your hair, the color of your skin, or the color of your eyes, those things being darker, being less favorable. And I guess that's where the field slaves became separated from the house slaves,
yes,
and things like that. So we would, it caused a rift amongst our own based on the skin color. And it still holds true today, sadly, but it is getting better. But that was just my own experience. I'm not sure that that's everyone else's, but that is one of the things that has hurt me a lot in my life. And it's so ironic. I spoke earlier that my mom had 12 children. I am one of 7 girls and 5 boys, and we are all of different colors. Some of us are very dark, and I used to be the fairest of them all. No Snow White pun intended, but I never experienced that inside the home. My darkest sister, she was our most beautiful in the family. So it wasn't like, you know, she's dark, she's ugly, you know. It was never a thing until I went outside the door. That's how I learned that it was a problem. And
when
I
you
just
got
didn't
to the
understand
real world.
It. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you get into the real world, things, other people's beliefs start to encroach upon you. And, you know, we don't have the discussion that, okay, so that's what they believe, but that's not what we believe, and that's not how we carry, and they may not be right. So I get what you're talking about, because yes, I have experienced it on the reverse tip. And I gotta tell you, yeah, it is hurtful, and it can be depressing. So how do we, and when I say we, I mean we black women, how do we move forward with combating depression? We talked about that self-care, but I mean, I'm just going to be frank. When we go out and we look for someone to help us, more professional help, what should we be looking at? Because I'm going to be honest, I don't see a whole lot of African-American therapists out there.
There's not. There's only about 2% of medical professionals, mental health professionals who are African-American. And that is a challenge in and of itself. But what one should look for, and you might not always find it on your first run, you need to find someone who is culturally sensitive and who has also had experience with other patients of other races. They have cultural sensitivity training for medical professionals. And it's important. I've been very fortunate to have therapists who I've not had that conflict with, but I've also been comfortable enough with them to explain my experiences in a way that they can not necessarily relate to, but they can understand my point of view and how things arrived, you know, just in, from my personal experience. But it is challenging. But just as we have to open our minds to them, they definitely have to get educated on some cultural sensitivity and just some relatability. And some people will never get that. Some professionals won't be able to learn that because their minds aren't open as well. And you can definitely, you'll be able to distinguish, but you may have to, it's gonna be a crapshoot. You're gonna have to do your due diligence and know that sometimes you have to walk away or fire a therapist or fire a doctor.
And you know, it's funny you say that because oftentimes we don't look at that professional as someone that we have hired to help us in whatever area we need help in. And what do I mean by that? You know, it took me a while to say, I need help, be it physical or mental, with someone, and I'm going to hire a doctor or a therapist or whatever to help me. I am paying you to help me. If you're not doing what you need to do so that I can get better, I'm going to have to go find someone else. And it's okay to do that because at the end of the day, you're using your resources. You're using your money and your time in getting better at whatever you're getting better at. You need to use your dollars wisely. Most insurance companies will pay for a mental health professional, just like they do for dental and physical health. So if your doctor wasn't treating you for your disease the right way, you would leave that doctor and you would go somewhere else. Mental health should be treated the same way.
You're right. Absolutely right. And also to consider everybody, you know, even the society is getting so diverse. At one point, whites will not be the, and they may already not be the majority of the population, but the ways, the scholarly ways of psychology, those are all Eurocentric views and learnings. Soon they're not going to work for our society because we're going to be so diverse. So it would behoove the medical professionals to get this cultural sensitivity, to get a diverse as patient load as they can, to fine tune these skills and to be able to help as many people, because there are too many choices out there to have a therapist that's not serving you well.
I agree with you. And I'm hoping that there is an increase in African-American therapists, because the African-American experience, it almost calls for having someone that is sensitive to your cultural base and understand, you know, certain things you should not have to repeat or explain in therapy.
There's nothing better than having a therapist that gets you. You get me. You understand where I'm coming from. You're right. You shouldn't have to explain. You shouldn't have to give a whole history lesson on why. And this is one of the reasons why Black people don't get as much help as we need to. We mistrust the medical community.
Yes.
If you have to educate somebody about the Tuskegee experiment and the Belmont Project and all these things, you know, they're just...
I'm wasting my time.
Exactly.
I'm educating you. You should be paying me.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. I know that, okay, so we talked about having characteristics when looking for a therapist. At what point, and I'm going to turn the tables just a little bit, do your close associates, friends, relatives, what do we look out for? Because, like I said, this is inspire, help a sister, uplift. So if I see that one of my sisters is depressed, how do I go about helping her? Well, first of all, you mentioned how to recognize it. How do I don't want to say intrude, because, you know, most people will never admit that they're depressed and most people will never admit that they need help. How do I approach this so that I can be of help if I'm in a caregiver's position?
I think it's very important to check in with people. Ask them, Angela, how are you doing today? How are you doing today? Not how are you doing in your life? Oh, I'm fine. Everything's good. Well, how are you doing today?
So not the generic, hey, how's it going? Because yes. You're going to get the generic answer. Oh, I'm good. It's, hey, how are you really doing?
Or how are you doing today? And wait for an answer. Some people say, how are you doing? And they don't wait for the response. Maybe they don't want to commit to the conversation that's going to come from it. But my theory is if you don't want to know how someone is, don't ask them.
Okay.
So if you ask someone how you are, be kind enough to wait for their response.
And so if you get the response that shows that they're not doing well,
well,
where do you go from there?
What I would do, I would ask, is it something you want to talk about? Do you care to talk about it with me? If not me, you know, do you think you need to talk with someone about it? I would extend knowledge of resources, especially, and I use myself for my primary example. When my mother passed, you know, I went to grief counseling. I would always recommend, oh, well, you know, Hospice of Maryland has some excellent resources that are free. You know, you could seek them out. They have excellent counselors. I can give you the name of a gentleman I worked with. You can also ask them, you know, let them know about the employment resources, the EAP, or some people call it, some organizations call it other things,
you know,
employee
that's
assistance.
Right. You just brought that up. That's an excellent point, because most employers do have counselors available for you to talk to without having any type of attribution or, hey, she went into the mental health counselor today, and, you know, you got that red flag flying over your head at work. I almost forgot about resources that are available to you at work. I'm starting to see more and more availability and knowledge being passed around about resources.
That's a ticket, passing that knowledge. And I know that I am more mindful about it, being someone that needed resources, and I didn't necessarily reach out when I was found myself first in need, and I continued to suppress those things. But as I learned about resources, I'm always a fan of sharing the knowledge. You know, if it's not something that I could help you with or you care to share with me, you should try, you know, talking to this person, or we have resources here, or the county has this resource here. Your primary care doctor could refer you to someone, or ask around at your church. Talk to your pastor. Talk to someone. Don't keep this to yourself, because it could eat you up inside, and it's not healthy.
I agree with you 100%. Ladies and gentlemen, it is at the top of the hour once again. You know, it always seems with you, we get engrossed in a conversation, and we just, I learned so much from you. And then time just skips away. Ladies and gentlemen, that is all we have for today at the Substance of Life podcast radio show. I'm so glad you could join us. I'm so glad that we could inspire, educate with a little bit of entertainment. Hey, 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 hey.